Hello, everyone. This is episode 24 of the iPhone podcast. I'd just like to welcome everyone back to the podcast, and we'd like to let you know that you can expect a new episode every Friday now that we're back. This episode, we're just going to cover some news stories, some of the major stories that we haven't had a chance to talk about, some app picks, and any other miscellaneous tidbits we can throw in there. My name is Gary Ng. I'm from iPhoneInCanada.ca. I am joined here by my fellow co-host, Justin Louie. Justin, it's been a while.
It's been a long time, but I'm well-rested and ready to go. We might as well tell people part of the reason we couldn't record is you've been away traveling the globe for the last month, so why don't you tell us a little bit about that, and I'm sure there's some iPhone-related stuff in there, so tell us about that a little bit.
My wife and I had a bit of an Asia trip planned, so we visited Hong Kong, Macau, Singapore, Thailand, and Vietnam. You mentioned some iPhone-related business. I actually did have a chance to meet up with the developer of SimplyTweet, which is one of my favorite and mostly used iPhone Twitter applications. I met up with Hui Boon Yar in Singapore, and we had a nice chat about, you know, what was his rationale, or, you know, how he came up with the application, some tips and advice for upcoming for new developers, and I'm actually going to have a post about that coming soon on the blog. So it was a great time, but you know, now it's time to get back to work.
What was it like using your iPhone while you were traveling? Did you unlock it and attempt to swap in different SIM cards, or did you just use it with Wi-Fi when you got a chance? How did that work?
I bought the factory unlocked version.
Oh yeah.
Of the iPhone 4, so I had no issue popping in a SIM card. In Hong Kong, I popped in a SIM card from the mobile carrier 3, and for about 198 Hong Kong dollars, which works out to be about 24, 25 bucks Canadian, I ended up getting a voice and data plan with a micro SIM, and I had data while in Hong Kong, could make voice calls locally and internationally. But when I went to other countries, I didn't bother getting any other SIM cards, because I just relied on Wi-Fi, and anytime I had a good signal, I could just launch up Skype and I could make any call to, the States and Canada or any other number with my balance. So that was, it was great. I mean, I could use WhatsApp. I could basically, my phone was just back to normal once I had Wi-Fi. So I love this thing.
Yeah, it is amazing how good all these different text messaging and VoIP apps have become. The only problem with them is some of them you have to have other people using them, so that's the big problem. I almost wish a couple would take off. Like Viber is so good. If everybody had that, we could almost just ditch Rogers and Bell and Fido. And as you said, there's that WhatsApp and another couple that we're going to discuss later in the show. If everybody used those, we could just get rid of text messaging altogether. So when you were in Hong Kong and you bought that SIM card, they just let you buy the SIM and have, it's like there, you don't have to worry about having a monthly plan and canceling. It was just like a pay-as-you-go type of situation?
Yeah, it was a dedicated pay-as-you-go situation. There are many choices. I did do some research before I went. I did get some help on Twitter. Basically, I just, you know, we stepped off the plane at the airport, went to the 7-Eleven, went up to the clerk and said, I need a pay-as-you-go SIM card. They said, which one? I'm like, that one. Dropped down the cash and just popped it in.
And that was it. So out of curiosity, for $25, how many minutes or how much data did that give you?
It said it gave me about 50 megs of data a day. And for surfing the web and just doing emails and all that, that was plenty. The best part was being able to use the maps function while you're traveling and knowing where you are. It's just like a lifeline in your pocket. So there were various other apps for, you know, when I was in Hong Kong, I had an MTR app for navigating their subway that showed you the map and how to get to places. So that was really easy. But yeah, I mean, just the data was great. Speeds were not as fast as I expected on 3G, but still very usable.
that's still incredible. You couldn't get a pay-as-you-go plan, anything like that, in North America. I've gone into the U.S. a few times, and for $20 or $30, you're probably getting like 100 minutes and like 20 megabytes of data total for the whole time, not per day. So that's pretty excellent.
And the best part about traveling with the iPhone 4 is that when we had internet at the hotel or in our hotel room, I could use FaceTime and just call back home to you know, my in-laws. My mother-in-law has an iPod Touch, the fourth gen, and we just use FaceTime for free calls. This is perfect.
Were the people over there, was the iPhone pretty popular in the countries you visited?
Very, very popular. In particular, in Hong Kong and Singapore, every time we're on public transit, I just, you know, would look over my shoulder, look around me, and everyone had an iPhone. Yeah, I noticed a lot of iPhone 4s in Hong Kong. In Singapore, I also noticed a lot of iPhone 4s, but many people had 3GS and 3G models. Basically, iPhones are everywhere.
That's cool. And it just shows you how amazing what Apple's done in just a couple years for it to be that big of a phenomenon worldwide.
Yeah, there was a story out today that mentioned the Apple stores in China, they're already outselling the flagship store in Manhattan. So just, I think, total sales or something. But yeah, it's an incredible stat. And I think, you know, it's an untapped market, and this is only the beginning.
Well, we missed a couple pretty big news stories while we were away, so we better get to those.
I completely agree. Let's start off with a Mac OS X software update that brought the Mac App Store. The Mac App Store basically is an app store for the Mac for users to download programs just like the App Store on iOS. But this time around, it's on your computer. It's on your Mac. And there are various apps that you can download, whether they're apps from Apple, such as Aperture, Pages, Keynote. They're also free apps, games, Angry Birds. So yeah, it's been a huge success for Apple so far. One of the notable apps, Aperture, is on the Mac App Store for $79.99. But if you compare it to the box set or the actual retail price, it's over $200 Canadian. So it's pretty incredible that people can download this for more than half off. What do you think about the App Store so far?
Well, first I'll apologize to people right off the bat who are listening to this because they're iPhone users and they aren't on a Mac, but it's a pretty big story. We're watching this merging of the iPhone and the Mac beginning sooner. And every time we do mention Mac news, I always get a lot of positive response. A lot of people, because they have an iPhone, have switched to Mac and they want to hear about it. So I do think it's worth covering. I absolutely love the Mac App Store. I predicted several times on this podcast that I thought it was going to do to desktop apps what the iOS version did to phone apps. Right off the bat, my two observations are, from the day it launched, I was literally refreshing my computer. It was exciting. It was almost like a kid at Christmas type of thing. And one of the first things I noticed, as you said, was that Aperture app. Now, a lot of people aren't big photographers or whatever, but Aperture is a huge program for photographers. It's one of the go-to apps for people in the business, and it sells really, really well at $199. And then when I saw that Apple put that on for $79.99, I was shocked. I was digging in there deeper. I expected it to be a one-day sale or some type of trial version or light version, and sure enough, it was the full version. So once I saw that, I knew that Apple was trying to kind of set the tone price-wise. So what excites me about it basically is you're going to be able to discover apps that you probably would have never found before. As I was mentioning to you before the show, I have all kinds of friends and family members who have recently switched to Macs, and they don't really even download software. They tend to just use what comes with it. So I think this will help people discover it. And then I do think we're going to get to a point where the prices will just go so low that forget piracy, forget cheesy kind of open source, poorly designed apps. People are going to be able to get these really quality apps at a fraction of what we used to pay. So that's why I'm most excited about it.
Yeah, I think this is just the beginning. I mean, as we've seen with the App Store for the iPhone and the iPad, obviously in the beginning, the first apps that get in there are these, you know, are the ones that experience some success. But over time, developers will continue to develop amazing apps, and we're going to hear about them. So, I mean, what I love about the Mac App Store is it's just dead easy for Mac newbies to download and install apps. Mac newbies like my father, who, you know, on his own time, he would not go searching and downloading Mac apps on his own. I guess with this, you know, Apple Mac App Store, it's a bit of a sandbox, and it helps, you know, protect people who don't know how to download apps on their own to just get it in a dead easy way.
Well, that's the funny thing. When it was first announced, Apple made a big deal to mention it, and then you also heard developers really touting the fact that it was going to be easy. And my reaction was like, wow, well, have you ever downloaded and installed a Mac app? Now it is super easy. It's way easier in general than it is on Windows and other systems. You grab those things, you slide them in your application folders, and they're good to go. But then now that I've been using the Mac App Store for a few weeks, it is nice just to be able to hit install. It's done in 10 seconds. It's installed, working perfectly. And when you relaunch the store, there's your updates available all in one place. So I do really like that. And I think it's interesting to note that the prices are a lot cheaper already, but still higher than I think. Another bit of news is Pixelmator, which is one of the most highly respected photo editing software. It's, if you don't know what it is, it's a cheaper, more intuitive, far as I'm concerned, better version of Photoshop. Again, it's always been a top-selling Mac app at $59.99. They put it in the App Store for $29.99. It's consistently been at the top of the App Store, and the developer mentioned this week that they've made $1 million in revenue in just 20 days. So that shows you, by being aggressive with the pricing, how good that can be. Another developer, an app that I use all the time that I actually got in a bundle, but it usually sells for, I think it was $30 or $40. It's called Little Snapper, which is for taking screenshots. They put it in the App Store for $5. And that developer also said that their sales went up something like 300% or something like that. So price is the key. I think they could even go a little lower. I think if, Pixelmator went down to $14.99, they'd see it even go further, because that just becomes a price where people who don't necessarily even think they need that are willing to try it because they see the great reviews.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. Right now, so the pricing is high, but at the same time, I'm not a developer. I don't know how much time is involved in creating an app for the Mac versus an app for the iPhone. I mean, can you shed any light on that? Like, what are the differences? How much more difficult is it to compare the two?
I think they're actually pretty similar in most cases when it comes to developing. I'm not a developer, but I've played with both SDKs. I've spoken to people. I think part of the reason Mac apps tend to be more expensive is because they have more features. And there's always been the developers I've spoken to, and or if you read their blogs, the one thing they've always said is, the reason we charge a lot for our apps is because it's a pro type app. It's an app that the everyday person doesn't need. So the people who need it, it's absolutely crucial to what they do, so they're willing to pay for it. And even if we lowered the price to $4.99 or 99 cents, it's not going to appeal to a wide enough audience. And I think that's the mistake they made, and this is actually proving, and iOS has proved, that if something's 99 cents or $4.99, yes, there are, don't get me wrong, not everybody developing for the Mac App Store or the iOS store is a 12-year-old kid in his basement. There are companies with 15 employees who have hundreds of thousands of dollars in development costs. And of course, a 99 cent price could scare them. But we've also seen people make millions and millions of dollars by doing that. So I think if I was a developer, I'd be trying different experiments with pricing. Because yes, if you have hundreds of thousands of dollars in development costs and you sell X number at $30, but you sell 1,000X at 99 cents or $5, it doesn't matter what your development costs, because your overall revenue is so much higher. So that's what I think will be interesting going forward, to see how many are going to be aggressive and then see that it actually pays off. I do think a year from now, apps will tend to be $4.99 in the Mac App Store. And I think the average person will now own 10 or 20 or 30 apps, whereas, like I mentioned, a lot of Mac users tend to just use what comes with the system.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens in 6 months' time. Let's move on to another story that's huge right now. It's the news of the day. We actually developed, well, I think you actually developed a game over this story. It's the one and the only, the Verizon iPhone. The Verizon iPhone is coming. It's actually coming to Verizon. It's actually a slightly redesigned model with a different antenna. And it's going to launch with iOS 4.3, which comes with a new feature called Personal Hotspot, which basically turns your iPhone into a hotspot, similar to the jailbroken app MyWi or any MiFi device that you can buy from any provider. So there's a new antenna. Apple said that both the antennas on the top and the bottom have been changed. Existing cases that work for the iPhone 4 will not work with this Verizon CDMA iPhone 4 because it is a different design. And yeah, it's basically going to come with the iOS 4.2.5 firmware, which was shown in the hands-on sort of demo model, but 4.3, the beta, has been released, so we can expect that to come any minute from Apple.
Yeah, this is actually, all joking aside, a huge story. Yes, sadly, it ends the drinking game. There's a lot of Apple iPhone blogs and podcasts, including ourselves, who are going to have to work a little harder at coming up with stories because there won't be a new rumor every 3 days to parse. But it is huge for several reasons. A, as you mentioned, it's now a CDMA phone. Apple went out of their way to make it clear that it is not an exclusive deal with Verizon. So for any other carriers in the U.S. that are on CDMA or other countries that are still primarily on that, you're now going to see the iPhone just basically roll out everywhere. So it'll be interesting to see that now that iPhone is head-to-head with things like BlackBerry and Android, how the real sales shake out. I think everyone's been kind of surprised how well iPhone has been able to sell, even though it's been missing from major carriers. Now that they're going to probably be on everywhere soon, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Android. I think it's also interesting to note that, like you said, Verizon is going to ship with the new version of the software. I can't see Apple wanting all their other carriers to lag behind. They'd like to have everybody there at the same time, so that means everybody should be seeing that 4.3 really soon. So I do hope that comes out soon. It looks like it has some pretty cool features. The personal hotspot is really, really cool, and I hope it comes to Canada. It seems to be working in the beta. There seems to be, I think you guys, like someone from iPhone of Canada, found a tweet earlier this week that seemed to suggest that maybe Rogers would just include it in the price since they do it with other phones. So I guess that personal hotspot is the big news, especially for people in Canada who have no interest in Verizon.
Yeah, I mean, personal hotspot is huge. We have been talking with Rogers. They did tell us that if the feature is released in Canada, they said they would support it. They didn't mention anything about pricing. Currently, we in Canada, users can tether to their laptops via USB or Bluetooth for free. This is a feature that is that people have to pay for in the States. So we are lucky in that sense. But let's move on to another story here. This one is huge. Another big story. On the eve of Apple's earnings call, Steve Jobs takes a medical leave of absence to focus on his health. Basically, it was an email he sent to his team. And in this email, he says that he's taking a medical leave of absence so he can focus on his health. He'll continue to be CEO and will be involved in major strategic decisions. He once again has asked Tim Cook to be responsible for day-to-day operations. And he says that, he's going to try to get better, and he's asking for people to respect his privacy. The last time he took a leave of absence was early January of 2009. And that's when Steve actually ended up getting a liver transplant. Tim Cook once again did take charge. So The interesting thing to note about this media advisory that was sent out, it was sent out on the 17th, which was on the day before Apple's earnings call, and the 17th was a non-trading day in the States, so it's a very strategic move from Apple, which we're not surprised with.
No, and again, this is one of those stories that has several different angles. As far as the way they handled it, I have no problem with that. Google just basically did the same thing, changed their CEO, and, oh, by the way, we'll do that just after announcing huge earnings. There's nothing really immoral or wrong about that. That's kind of how everybody does it. As far as Steve asking for his privacy, I'm just one small person who does a little bit of media in that area, but I will respect it. I think people should. You will not hear me podcasting or blogging about any rumors about the man's health. All I will say, as far as the status of Apple goes, I don't find that there's a lot of realistic coverage on this. I find that there are people who basically say Steve Jobs is Apple and the company is doomed without him. I don't think that's very realistic. And then there are people who basically say they won't miss a beat without Steve Jobs, and they name all these things about, well, they have Ives to design it and they have these amazing supply chains. Again, that's all true too. But you can't underestimate this man's vision. So will Apple thrive still with Steve Jobs if he can't come back? I think they'll be fine, but it will never quite be the same. And on a personal level, I have to say the news does sadden me a little bit, because I do, as geeky as this sounds, look to Steve Jobs as a bit of a hero. I've basically, since I've been a kid, used computers for my personal enjoyment. They were a big part of me going through school and getting my degree, and they're basically how I make my living now. And from someone who unfortunately used Windows for a while there, this is a man who's come up with products that, yes, they're cool and they have that fact, but I mean, they really make your day-to-day life easier, and I admire what he's been able to do it, and he's done it his way. And to basically start the personal computer revolution, be ousted out of your own company to watch it, need an injection from Microsoft to even stay in business, to then come back and turn it into one of the biggest companies in the world, to me is the great business story of our time. So from that standpoint, I hope he's okay and is able to come back soon.
Yeah, I definitely hope Steve will come back soon. But like you mentioned, the timeline that Apple has set, they have everything set in advance, so I don't think that the day-to-day operations and will change so much. I'm sure they have various models already planned in their pipeline, whether it's a Mac refresh that should be upcoming soon, or the next iPad, or the upcoming iPhone. I mean, they have everything planned. I think, maybe this, I might be playing devil's advocate, but this could be another way for Apple to launch their next product with Steve's comeback.
I'm sure he wants to do that. Yeah,
exactly. When Steve comes back, that's news enough already, right? And for him to come back and to be on stage, I mean, damn! I can only imagine the hype.
And you could tell, like, there's a lot of different things said about Steve Jobs, but nobody can doubt the man's commitment to Apple and his passion for those type of products. I mean, even if you read the wording of his press release, it wasn't that business speak you normally hear. He basically signed off saying, I love Apple and I want to be back. And that's what it's all about. And the other thing that I think is interesting to point out is we always hear these stories about what a nutcase Steve Jobs is and how hard he is to work for, and that he's critical and nothing's ever good enough, and he's going to tell you you're doing a shit job 90% of the time or whatever it is. A survey came out a few months ago rating employee satisfaction with the CEO, and he was the highest rated. So even though he is this real taskmaster, as you may put it that way, people do respect that. So I think even without him going forward, I think he's installed a culture in Apple where people who work there and go to work there are serious about it and realize that, hey, it's not always about what we come up with. It's what we say no to. And we're not going to become a Sony or these other companies that just throw mud against the wall, hoping to find something. They work on products for years and years and years till they get it right. Then it comes out and it's a success. And then they keep refining it. Look at the iPhone. It was the best phone from the minute it hit the market, and it's continued to get better. It's not somebody who just threw something out there and, oh, we're the best, and now we're going to rest on that. It's improved significantly pretty much every few months with software, and then the hardware gets better each time too. So I think he's put that culture into Apple, and hopefully he's back. And then if for some reason he can't or decides to retire, I think he's installed that culture in there, and it'll continue to be a great company.
Agreed. Let's move on. Just some news that has been pretty big this week. This one's related to the iPad. News Corp, and Apple, they've sent out press invites to announce that The Daily is coming February 2nd. This is an iPad-only newspaper that is going to be working out of New York City. News Corp has set up an office there, and this is going to be an iPad-only newspaper. So it's going to be quite interesting to see how well an iPad-only newspaper will work on the iPad. I mean, it'd be interesting. It'd be interesting to see if there'd be any sort of Canadian equivalent, if there are any industries in Canada that would want to take on this approach. But then again, it comes down to readership. How many people will read a Canadian newspaper on the iPad? I think already a lot of people do. But to be willing to pay for it and to get exclusive content, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, this is, again, I say this about every story, but we have big stories this week. This is an important story, not only for the iPad and the iPhone, but basically for journalism, because I've been saying the newspaper's dead for years. And I kind of say it almost with a little bit of glee, because I thought the putting it on paper and overcharging for it was a stupid and kind of outdated model. But at the same time, as great as blogging is, how often is blogging just at like pointing someone to a news story that's been out there, or pointing to a so-called real journalist article and then commenting on it? I love blogging, and I think that's kind of the future of the internet. There's so much out there. If you can find someone you trust to sort of curate that news, give an example. I follow Daring Fireball, John Gruber's site. He's one of the most well-respected writers of sort of this generation, but half the time the man writes one sentence, but he just finds the right articles. And when he does comment, it's smart and it tells you what to sort of look for. That's important, but that doesn't send people onto the ground into a rack to report these stories. So we still need to find a way for people to make money. So if something like this can not only be cheap enough that it can start allowing these people to make revenue by actually people paying for news again, I think that's a good thing. But I hope they don't rest too much on that, because I don't feel like most people are going to be willing to pay for news now that so much is available for free. So they need to be smart and figure out other ways, unique advertising deals. So that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping the iPad can be cheap enough that they can make some revenue and buy it. And I hope people are willing to pay 99 cents a week or something along those lines for it. But then at the same time, I hope it's really great content that is then, again, some kind of other advertising model. Like the iAds haven't really taken off, but I do think they're interesting that you can just, if something was really related, I think the day of sort of like it being a conflict of interest are over. I think everybody understands that things have to make money. So if I'm reading an article on Mac and there's a little Apple ad saying, oh, by the way, look what's new in the Mac App Store, I don't find that a problem. That's probably a smart way to do it. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out.
I think a lot of, newspapers that are dying, I mean, I think they'd definitely be taking a real close look at what they're going to be doing here to see if it's successful. But I mean, with almost 15 million iPads sold in 2010 and more expected for this year, I mean, the sky's the limit, really.
Yeah, everyone's going to have some type of device to handle this stuff. And as I said, it's easy for us to sort of say, oh, it's the media old ways dead. it should be dead in the way they deliver it, but we still need that content. The other thing is newspapers always complain that, oh, well, newspapers are dying because everybody just wants everything for free. That's not really the case. Newspapers, it sounds corny, but it's yesterday's news. By the time you can get something out in print, it's already old news. And instead of adapting, like, I think newspapers should have saw that right away, got out of the business of, oh, here's a headline and here's this news. They should have completely went to more in-depth coverage. And then I think people would have realized, hey, I'm going to go to CNN.com to find out, hey, what was that plane crash or what happened with this earthquake? But then they would go back to the paper for in-depth, excellent coverage. And unfortunately, newspapers didn't do that. If you grabbed a local paper, it was still just the same cheesy headline with not much reporting, but a day late because you just can never get something out on paper. Now with an iPad, you can go a little bit back to more to that delivery mechanism, but it's instant. That thing can just be on your iPad every morning when you wake up. And if the content is good, the price is right, and they have an ad system that is not distracting or bad for the reader, but can make them money at the same time, then I think this will all work out and we won't be talking about journalism being dead anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, certain newspapers that don't have innovative news stories or investigative reporting, they will be suffering, but I think newspapers definitely will be around to stay because people, you know, they love reading the paper, just to touch paper, I guess. It's a way of life. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how this works out. I'm looking forward to it. But let's move on to the next story. 10 billion downloads in the App Store. And the interesting thing about this is that once again, Apple had a contest. This time it was to track the 10 billionth download. Turned out to be a user in the United Kingdom. I think it was a mom. Anyways, Apple tried calling her, and she thought it was a hoax, and she hung up on Apple. Apple called back, and finally, you know, her daughters told her, "Mom, it's real." And yeah, this young family ended up getting a $10,000 iTunes gift card.
Yeah, it's a big story, but I'm just disappointed. They've sold or downloaded 10 billion apps. I've downloaded at least a billion of those, so I thought I had a pretty good chance of winning, but I didn't. So congratulations to her. That's 10,000 on iTunes would last me a few months anyways. That's a pretty cool prize.
Yeah. Other news, Apple has continued to increase their social media presence. The App Store got its own Twitter account. Can't remember how many users it has, but from the last time I checked, it was a ridiculous number. Right now, 116,000 followers. When it first launched, it only had about 1,000 or so. I tracked in a minute, it gained about 1,500 followers. So yeah, it's out there. If you want to follow Phil Schiller, from Apple's vice president of worldwide marketing, he is also on Twitter. Who else is on Twitter?
Just for fun, if you can find it quickly, look up their iTunes account. I think they have one just straight for iTunes. I'd be interested to see how many people are following that.
It says here, the iTunes Twitter account has approximately 8,300 followers.
Okay, so that's I wanted to have that illustrate the point I was going to make. It's funny that this became such a big news story. Apple has had 4 or 5 Twitter accounts for the last couple years, and they've been tweeting out for at least a year every Tuesday kind of the big music releases, and it has 8,000, whereas the App Store has 100,000 in a couple of days. And the day it was announced, the first time I looked at it, it was already up to 15,000. So again, this actually isn't news because Apple's been doing it for a while. It's just like anything App Store, people are fascinated by. For it to get to 100,000 is just unbelievable. But it actually, I've been following it, and I do recommend, if you guys are on Twitter, people listening, you should check it out because they do feature some good apps. That app discovery is kind of the main issue. So it's no big deal to see them post two or three times a day. You might find a gem of an app that you might not have found otherwise.
Yeah, out of the five various iTunes Twitter accounts, iTunes Trailers actually has the most followers at 1.5 million. So, but I mean, that account has been out for a while. It'll be interesting to see how quickly the App Store account reaches that number.
And the Trailers one is a little bit of a fake because that one, at least for a while, was the featured user thing when Twitter announced that. That's how people like Kevin Rose went from like 15,000 followers to like a million something, and people like Ashton Kutcher got to 5 or 6 million. So the Trailers again is a good account, but that one did get put on the suggested users under movies at one point, so that's why that one got so high. But it's interesting to see Apple doing a little more reach out. Like you said, Phil Schiller's on there and he's legitimately just tweeting. Like, he's not just doing Apple stuff, he's putting up personal pictures and things. So that's a little bit of a different approach than we've seen from most people who work for Apple.
Yeah. Next up here is a sort of another little story here. Apple.com this week had a bit of a redesign. For those who have noticed, the navigation bar has been darkened. The website is now a lot more HTML5 compliant, I guess. I mean, they've added a whole bunch of new goodies in there. If you go to the Mac page, there are little springy applications to help you navigate from Macs to applications to accessories, and just a nice little touch to their website.
Yeah, Apple's always had one of the best websites, and it's just got better. And again, only Apple could, the website slight redesign could garner the attention it did, including at about 2 a.m. the other night while it was happening. One of the sites were live blogging it and a couple people were live Twittering it as it went down. So again, if I've missed any other companies getting that kind of coverage over a slight design, let me know, but I don't think there is. It's, again, everything in the Apple universe is big news, and we wonder why some people call us a cult.
Yes. Let's move on now to some of our favorite app picks. I know we haven't done this for a while, but do you have any apps you want to start off with?
Well, let's talk briefly. I've mentioned it several times, but now you're a user, and I want to point people to it again, is Instapaper. There's two main points with Instapaper. It's one of those apps that everybody who uses worships, but the average person doesn't use it because they almost don't understand what it's for. And I could do probably an hour podcast just on Instapaper, but as quickly as I can say, it basically serves two functions. Function one is to keep a list of stuff you want to read. So while you're on your iPhone or you're on your computer and you come across an article that's a longer article and you're like, hey, I want to read this, but I don't have time right now. A lot of times you bookmark it or put it on Delicious and you never go back to it. Instapaper has a little bookmarklet that's really, you just drag onto your toolbar and in Safari. It also works with a lot of other apps. So if you're using a news app, check it. It usually has a thing where you can add in your Instapaper account. And basically, it just one click, it goes to your Instapaper. And then when you launch the Instapaper app, you have a nice list of articles, almost like your own curated newspaper, to read everything you wanted to do. And the other nice feature that I don't think I've always been really clear on explaining to people is it also reformats the text. So you set the font, you set the background, the default's perfect, I've never changed it, but the app allows you to change it. And then no matter what source you're getting the article from, you're getting a nice white background with a nice Helvetica, easy to read font. So when you go to those pages that use 10-point fonts or Comic Sans or some font you can't read or some funky color in the background, all that's stripped away and you just have this really easy to use experience. And what do you think of it, Gary? Because I know I had mentioned it before and you hadn't really tried it, and you tweeted the other day that you're starting to use it.
Before I had checked out Instapaper quickly, and I never really took the time to fully use it and to set it up properly, but now that I have, it's been a real joy to use. I've noticed a lot of apps have Instapaper support. I guess for me, it was just one more thing for me to set up and to use, and I guess I was a bit lazy, but now that I am using it, I find it's incredible to set up the Instapaper bookmark in Safari, on my iPhone, on my iPad, and on my Mac. It's a great way to sort of read those longer articles that you just don't have time to read. And like you said, it's nice that it is just, it's a very clean layout. It remembers where you have left off. You can quickly share the article or go back to the main article, increase the size. You can turn on tilt scrolling, which is kind of neat. The app's very simplistic, so simple that you sort of need to really dive into it and just sort of explore the guts of it to really get the most out of it.
Well, you hit the nail on the head, and I think that's the reason most people don't use services like this, is it does take some learning, and more importantly, it does take some setup, and most people just don't want to do that work. In the new year, I've made a little bit of a commitment to myself and to people who follow what I do. I tend to try everything, and I tend to get excited about new services, and I'm not really conscious of people, how much work it is for people or how busy people are. My friends, I drive them crazy because I send them an invite for some new service and they're like, oh, you sent me 50 of these. Like, I got to set up another thing. So I think for now on the podcast, I'm going to use things for several weeks and then we can start really kind of pointing people to the ones that are worth their time to set up. And Instapaper is definitely one of them. If you use a Twitter client, it should support it. Go into the settings, fill out your Instapaper account. Go into Safari or whatever web browser. There's not a single web browser that isn't supported in some way. It'll either have a little, like in a Chrome type of thing, like an extension, or it will have what's called a bookmarklet. Take the time to put your information in on a few apps. If a news app has it, put it in your Twitter app, install it on your browser, and then just start using it. And I think you'll find that it's worth that time. It will take you 20 minutes to get that all set up. It'll take you some time to get used to it. But once you're using it, it's well worth doing. And we should point out that Instapaper, it's free to set up an account. They have a free version of the app. And then they have a $5 pro app that brings out a lot of extra features. But the free one does work really well. I used it for a while. Main reason I actually upgraded early on was just to sort of reward the developer. I figured, hey, if someone sort of made my life this much easier and this much more enjoyable to do these things, he deserves my $5. So try it for free, and if you like it, then upgrade to the pro.
Yeah, I find it's a great way. What I love about Instapaper is that, you know, you can just quickly log in. It's easy to set up an account. I mean, if you have a throwaway email and you can just punch in that email you don't even need to set up a password. You can access all your articles by just punching in your email without a password. So that's what else I love about it, to be able to save articles. So it's great. And it's one of those apps you tend to overlook if you're busy and you just don't have time to set it up. But let's break into another app that I'd like to talk about. And this is one that we sort of talked about while I was traveling, and that's Beluga, which is basically a chat app similar to a WhatsApp. But what makes Beluga interesting is that it's trying to master group chat. And also with Beluga, you can access chat from the internet. From any web browser, you can access Beluga chat, which is really nice.
Yeah, I don't even really have any interest in the group chat functionality, but I absolutely love Beluga. And I was glad that you pointed it out. You were surprised to have found an app that I hadn't tried, but you were able to do it, and I appreciate that. To me, that's sort of the holy grail for apps. I kind of wish that Apple would just bring out an iChat app for the reason that I like MMS, just what's built into Rogers. It's their messaging app on the iPhone is good to just be able to send audio, video, and pictures to friends is great, but the only problem is it's huge money from Rogers if you weren't grandfathered into a plan that has it. So I have a bunch of friends who don't want to pay Rogers, and I don't recommend them paying. If you can get MMS as part of a bundle that makes it a good deal, do it. But if not, there's no way we should be paying Rogers that kind of money for their messaging. So then you try all these different services, and I found all of them to be good, but wanting. The ones that work really well are ugly, or the ones that are decent looking and work pretty well are really hard to sign up for, and you can't get your friends on them because there's this big process to sign up. Beluga was really simple to set up. It looks really good, and I just like how it kind of replaces text and picture messaging. You throw in pictures and you can view them right in line. So I've converted several people already, and it's made its way onto my main folder. I have a kind of a go-to folder on my dock with all my main apps, and it is now in there. So I'm glad you found it, and people should check it out.
Yeah, it's a pretty neat app. But like you said about the iChat app, I think this is coming from Apple. It's inevitable. It could be, you know, the one app that would, you know, slay, you know, the almighty BlackBerry Messenger that just ties everyone to their BlackBerry. It's long overdue. We could see it in iOS 5 that I would think would be coming, you know, this spring with a preview and hopefully in the summer. But that's the one thing missing from here. It's a universal chat app where you could just sign in with your Apple account, Apple ID, and just to be able to talk to other iPhone users instantly.
I'm not sure when we'll get it, because I do believe, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I think at the end of the day, Apple, they're not a charity. To say they just do everything for the users is obviously not true. To say they do everything for the money is not true. It's somewhere in the middle. But I do think the lack of iChat is probably related to deals with the carriers. The text messaging is such a cash cow for almost all carriers worldwide. Different for different. It's more expensive in certain places. But it's a big revenue stream for the carriers. So I think that's the main reason we haven't seen it. So it'll be interesting to see when Apple will finally say, hey, the hell with you. We've protected your business model long enough. Now we're including it. Because again, the iPhone is so popular that I know that if they built an iChat, 99% of everybody I deal with on a day-to-day basis has an iPhone. So I wouldn't need much in the way of text if they bring out iChat.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be the killer app that would be coming, so we'll have to wait and see. Another app that I would highly recommend for people who are traveling to another country that uses a different currency is the XE app. It's a free app. The cool thing about it is that it downloads live exchange rates, and you can use it offline. It's the best app, I would say, for doing conversion of money on the go. I used it extensively while I was traveling, and it was great. That's the XE iPhone app.
Sounds good. I'm not much of a traveler, but I'm sure there's other people out there who are. Another app that I think I'll use as a pick this week, and Gary has tried it briefly, is an app called Momento. And basically the short version of this app is that it's a diary app that allows you to keep a diary. You can add pictures, you can add video, you can add sounds, and then you can just write down your thoughts and tag them. And it's been a pick, an Apple pick several times. It's been featured on the commercials. I think main reason people like it is it's just really fast and smooth and a really attractive looking app. But the kind of the secret feature for me is it also allows you to add all of your social network accounts into it. So for instance, I've added my Twitter account, my Facebook account. I've added my GetGlue account, which brings in what movies and TV shows I've been watching. It can bring in your Flickr, has huge support for all the main services. And then it also just has a basic RSS feed. So you can even import your own blog, or you can just import another service that they don't support directly, use their RSS feed. And the kind of thing that I didn't think about at all when I tried the app is it has an option that allows you to import all. Like you can it's like, say for instance, Twitter, you can just do your tweets. You can do just at replies or not at replies. You can just pick to do your new one, but it also has an option to pull in everything. So for Twitter, for example, I was able to pull in all my Twitter interactions all the way back to 2007 or 2008 when I signed up. And now you have basically a a record of all your stuff online. So I was able to just search things. Like I typed in U2 and was able to see, oh yeah, it was September that I went to see them. And here's my Flickr pictures. And here's, and it's all by day. You can select it by the calendar. So for people who either use social media a lot just because they really like it, or you use it for your business, this is the one app that kind of merges everything together and gives you this amazing searchable database to find out what you did on a certain day, or if you remember tweeting out a certain link or somebody commenting about a certain thing. It's pretty great to just be able to type in a word and see, oh, here's the date that this happened.
Yeah, it's I did test out Memento. The interface is beautiful. But I never did, like I said, once again, I'm sort of the, I just blast through apps when really I should spend some more time checking them out. It was nice. I didn't have a chance to plug in all my social media accounts since, you know, we all have about 100 or so. But like you said, I like how the way it is integrated. I would like to see some sort of built-in cloud service that would allow people to save their, you know, their diary entries into Dropbox or some sort of default storage. So in the event of some sort of fatal crash or error, you don't lose, you know, that haiku poem you were writing about when you're up on that mountain.
Yeah, I should point out that it does have backup, and it's actually a pretty impressive backup. It backs up everything, the pictures, everything. And what you do is you just hit backup, and then the next time you go to iTunes, it's available in that section. But now with Dropbox being so easy to implement, it's kind of silly for them not to have that feature. So my guess is it's already in the works, but I think I will reach out and email that developer and see if that's on the roadmap. But as I said, if you want to keep a journal, which a lot of people do, I'm not much of a journaler. I don't think there's probably a better app out there. It just is so intuitive how it works. And like you said, it really looks great, which I'm a sucker for. If an app looks good, that's one way to get me. But the fact that you can import all of your social media stuff and then just have, again, this hub to kind of go back and find these things, I think is the secret killer feature that they don't even really promote as being one of the reasons you'd want the app. And to me, that's the killer part of it. So if journaling sounds interesting to you, or you'd like the idea of typing in a keyword and kind of being able to go back to see when you saw that movie or when you had that dinner or when you saw that concert, this is the app for that. And it's pretty good price for everything it does. I think it's $2.99, so highly recommended from me.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. So definitely everyone check out those apps that we've been talking about. I think for this week, we've done a great job of sort of summarizing the stories that we thought would be worthwhile sharing with our iPhone podcast audience. We'd like to thank you for listening, and we do apologize for that, break that we did take, but I think, you know, we are back in 2011. We are re-energized and ready to get a consistent schedule of shows for everyone to listen to. Thanks again for listening to the iPhone podcast. I want to remind everyone to rate us on iTunes. You can follow the show and provide feedback by visiting our blog at theiphonepodcast.com or by following us on Twitter. Once again, I'm located at twitter.com/iPhoneInCanada, and Justin is located at twitter.com/JustinLouis. That's Louey. So Justin, it was great talking with you again on episode 24, and I look forward to doing it again on episode 25.
Absolutely, and people have my word, we'll get this thing out on a regular basis. It will probably go up because I'm a bit of a night owl. If you're out there, it'll probably go out late in the night, Thursday night, but it'll be there for everybody Friday. We have a commitment to get that out on Friday, even if that means sometimes recording a little earlier. So look for that. As Gary said, you know how to get a hold of us. You could also email me. I'm Justin@theiphonepodcast.com. And as far as the iTunes ratings go, we appreciate all the reviews. And I would say even extra now, if people could go out there and rate us on iTunes, we'd really appreciate it, because iTunes basically puts their ratings by recent ratings. And because we haven't been on for a while, we've probably kind of disappeared from the store a little bit. So that's the best way to let new people find the show. Even if you don't have time to write a review, even just in the iTunes app on your phone or in iTunes, just even doing the star ratings helps a lot. Of course, a review is better, but I understand a lot of people don't have time to do that. So even if you can just give us a star rating, whatever you think, we'd really appreciate it. And we'll keep doing this, keep making it better, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks again, everyone.